Well, thanks very much for agreeing to talk. I really appreciate that.
Oh, no problem. Look, it's a little heartbreaking what you're going through, and I was talking about it with Christina this morning, so I have some good feedback from somebody who knows what they're doing, so hopefully that will help. So, yeah, do you want to sort of add anything to well, I guess, do you want to talk about your mom's funeral, or do you want to talk about your girlfriend, or both, or what's
Oh, blimey, yeah, where to start even? I mean, it would be really useful to hear your feedback on both. I mean,
Sure.
just because they're both kind of sort of happening right now, so that would be great.
Right, okay. Which one would you like to start with?
Well, let's do the funeral because that was the one that I sent first, so just.
What is the status of your mum's health at the moment?
She is completely incapacitated and is beyond, I mean, she's effectively not quite in a coma, but I mean, what's happened is that in the last 10 years, as I said in the mail, her mental faculties have basically just started to shut down as she's had this progressive early onset dementia.
Right.
And so the way that it works is that, first of all, you lose sort of the ability to, you start forgetting things and you lose the ability to communicate properly, and then as time goes by, it gets into kind of more basic functions like breathing and eating and so forth. And so at the moment, she's no longer able to feed herself. She can't move, and so I mean, they really have very little understanding of the dementia. So it's very hard to tell, but the basic prognosis is things are shutting down one by one, and there will come a point, and they think that should be very soon, where she just basically her brain is not getting her body to do the basics that you need to just to actually just keep living.
Right.
So that's what's happening. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, as a person, she stopped recognizably being alive for me some years ago now. I mean,
Sure,
so
sure.
this is like it's sort of something that's been happening over a very long period, and so she's well, she's under essentially sort of constant care, and she's had to be resuscitated a couple of times, and so it's just really bad situation, and I've stopped going, and I stopped going to visit before this whole discussion on free domain, but I mean, it's just because it just seemed to me to be a completely bizarre thing to just go and stand there, and I mean, I just sort of thought, well, what is this? I mean, it's a bit weird, really, because it's like she's dead already, and yet she's not dead.
Right, not to put too fine a point on it, and with all due sympathy for a very difficult situation, it's like going to visit a breathing corpse, right?
Yeah, essentially, yeah. And then not only that, but then I had to deal with my aunt doing all of this kind of, maybe she's alive inside and just can't talk to us, and that's just. That was just annoying because, I've seen brain scans, and I mean, there's just no blood going to certain parts of her brain. So,
Right.
and so I had to put up with a lot of kind of mysticism from my aunt, who's not religious, but having been brought up in a Catholic family as my mother was, there's all sorts of funny mysticism in there about my mother's a spirit and all this kind of stuff. I don't
Right, I mean,
know.
there is an identity that is independent of biology in any mystical view of the human life, right? So there's an identity that is not dependent upon blood going to the brain. There is not a dependent upon physical life. So there is a your mom in there for mystical people that has nothing to do with the brain going dark. Whereas, of course, for anybody with a scientific or empirical bent, when the brain goes down, like our personality, our identity is entirely dependent upon the biological. When the biological dies or goes in stages, that's our personality and identity being wiped out of the map.
Yeah. So, I mean, I had a really, I did not have a great relationship with my mum anyway, and it was, I mean, in some senses, I sort of put quite a lot of distance between myself and her long before this the health issue came up. But also, having said that, she also essentially just wasn't around that much when I was a kid, and afterwards she spent a lot of time going off around the world basically trying to follow after this very abusive guy who went and lived in America and then in South Africa and various other places, which was actually fantastic for me as a teenager, because it meant I had the house to myself,
which
actually, you know, in some ways was kind of ideal for some purposes. But anyway, the point I just wanted to make was that through this whole discussion that we've been having, I never had a chance to kind of talk to her with a different perspective about the past, and so, you know, I was never going to get any more information out of this situation, and I felt for myself that just my evaluation of my relationship with her has been more something just that I've been doing on my own. And as you know, I do food for my father about 9 months ago now. And as far as my mother's concerned, there's this oncoming thing, which is going to be her funeral. And as I said in my email, you know, basically I don't want to go. Because, I mean, just what does it even mean for me to go? It just doesn't feel a genuine thing for me to do, to go along there. And especially because I know that there's going to be this big expectation, and it's almost been made absolutely explicit by my aunt, which is that I'm to go along to show myself as the grieving son, and that we can all then sort of say, oh, isn't it, you know, what a wonderful person, and it's just a tragedy and everything else. And my feelings about it are, you know, I mean, obviously, it's a really horrible thing that happened to her. It's just an awful, awful thing. In some ways, as a way to go, it's, you know, it's actually, you know, you become less and less conscious of it. And I think it was scary for her in the beginning, but it certainly, you know, there are nastier ways to go in terms of sort of pain and so forth. But nonetheless, the point being, nobody wants anybody else to go through a long period of suffering. But my feelings about my mother are much more complicated. And, you know, I've got big issues with what happened in the past. And I certainly don't feel comfortable going along and having this weight of expectation of me being this, you know, grieving son. And so I said, I'm not going. And that really has gone down very badly.
For sure.
So I'm now getting, my father having left me alone for a long time, I'm now getting emails saying, you know, that my aunt will be devastated if I don't go. And
right.
That, you know, he wants us all to go together, but if you know, if I really must not see him, then I can go and he'll step out, you know, all this stuff.
Right.
So, I mean, before things came up with my girlfriend, the big issue for me was just that this is like I didn't really want this to be a decisive moment for me to have to basically more or less defoo everyone, sort of like in a wanna, because I feel like I'm heading towards major social ostracism for being such a, you know, heartless, you know, how could you not go, all this type of stuff, which seems to me to be pulling. I mean, as I said, I, to be honest with you, I just hadn't really even thought about defooing other family relatives, partly because I didn't see them that much anyway, but I don't know, it just never, somehow, it never occurred to me that it was going to come to a confrontation like this quickly, because all my brain space was taken up with my dad, and now, well, basically, yeah, I just feel like I would be really ungenuine to myself if I just said, oh, all right then, you know, it's only an afternoon or whatever, let's do it. But also, on the other hand, I feel like I can't yet. I don't quite know why. I think it's because my aunt was a bit of a safe haven, or at least her house felt like that when I was a kid. I don't yet feel confident enough just to say, look, don't phone me anymore.
Right.
So I think I'm going to have to go and talk to her in order for me to feel confident afterwards. I did tell her, this is my perspective, this is how this is making me feel. But I know it's going to be really unpleasant because she's not listening at all. She's on a mission to, you know, convert me to going to this funeral, and she's not interested in hearing. She's certainly not interested in hearing my reasons why I'm not seeing my father.
Right.
So it's all just sort of come to a head at the same time. And at the same time, you know, obviously, I've got mixed feelings about my mum dying as well.
Of course.
Because, you know, because it's well, as I say, you don't, you know, I wouldn't wish it on anybody, that. And also, she's an important character in my life that I've got a huge history with. So it's all just kind of gone splat, basically, with the rest of my family. And I feel unprepared for it. And I don't feel very confident about just saying, don't phone me anymore.
Right. Right. So during a time of enormous personal stress for you, I mean, your mother's dying and you have some issues with your girlfriend and you've got a really challenging rubber meets the road situation in terms of values, which, you know, I mean, all due sympathy. At all of this time, you also have this additional challenge, which is pretty significant, of trying to figure out what you're going to do, A, with a funeral, which is, you know, stressful enough, and B, with extended family. And it really is a highly challenging, highly difficult, highly unpleasant, highly stressful situation. So, I mean, I think first of all, you should cut yourself some slack as far as that goes. There is no easy answer to this, right? I mean, this is, as you say, it's a complicated set of feelings. It's a complicated situation. And it is, in anybody's life, this would be a very challenging, very difficult situation. So, first of all, I mean, this is entirely natural, it would seem to me, given the difficulty of the situation. That having been said, you said that your feelings for your mother were complicated.
Mm.
So tell me a little bit about that, because I get the bad stuff, but tell me about the complicated stuff because complicated usually means ambivalent, right? Complicated usually means that, well, there was good stuff, there was bad stuff, this, that, and the other. But tell me about I just want to make sure I understand the bad.
Well, I mean, the issue for me is that I felt that speaking to my father, you know, having gained some real insight into what the emotional issues were, I had an opportunity to go and do that thing about making myself vulnerable in front of him and then observing what his response was. And that was so valuable to me. I mean, that just meant so much in terms of understanding, because I actually defooed from him 10 years ago. I just said, look, I've had enough. This is just, you know, this is what your idea of family is. This doesn't seem to be mine, and I've had enough. And we went through this whole discussion where he basically said, oh, it's not that serious, blah, 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 blah. And at the end of the day, I chose to, what I thought was, take the moral high ground and think, though, I'm so mature, I can kind of forgive him and all this stuff. And he's got his problems. I'm an adult now. I can see his bad sides. You know, so now I'm so mature, I'm in a conversation with him again, right? So I kind of went through a lot of up and down with my father. And as you know, then recently, I thought, bollocks to forgiving him, I've had enough,
right?
With my mother, because she was always, always much more emotionally, basically unstable and vulnerable, I never had the feeling that I could really confront her. In some ways, she was kind
too
of
fragile.
Yeah, in some ways, she was basically like a battered woman in certain respects. She
sure.
was with a really abusive guy who used to just scream. I don't know if he was physically violent towards her. I didn't see that. But it wouldn't surprise me at all. I mean, I never saw her coming out with black eyes or something. But
the verbal abuse is worse.
Well, yeah. Yeah. I mean, you've talked about that. And it was really nasty verbal abuse as well.
Right. Right.
And she was a woman who, you know, who, because I could see that she was barely holding it together in certain respects, I kind of got on with looking after myself to a great extent and keeping myself to a certain extent distant from her, which wasn't necessarily that difficult because she just wasn't around very much. She was always going off to some, you know, left-wing political marches or events or meetings or whatever, or there was this, because we lived in this hippie commune, there was always just some nonsense going on. So in a sense, I kind of was left out to a certain degree anyway, but I didn't get the same confrontation. And I also got all sorts of totally, like, guilt or offloading from her, which at the time I knew this is just wrong, but I didn't feel confident enough to really get angry, with her. I mean, for example, I mean, as I said in my email, you know, my childhood with her was just completely chaotic. No property rights in our household, no boundaries, my stuff constantly getting moved around and lost or whatever. Weird people doing their stupid hippie commune stuff, her getting shouted at by her boyfriend. And she clearly felt guilt about the fact that this was not a great environment for me, apart from which I was in schools where I was getting beaten up and all this kind of stuff. So she, I remember, for example, one incident where I must have been about maybe 13 or 14, and she just stopped, and we just got in the car from visiting my aunt, and she just got in, we got in the car, and before starting the car, there was a lot, like this long pause, her looking slightly mournfully out of the windscreen, she goes to me, was I a good mother?
Right.
And I just knew, like, well, you're not even giving me an option to answer that, are you? I mean, there's no way that that's like, let's talk about things that happened. That's just, you want me to basically, you know,
comfort her.
Comfort.
To lie
you.
To her. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
To deny your own history, your own experience. And if you have to ask that question, you know the answer. Like, if I were to go up to Christina and say, Christina, am I a good husband? I mean, why would I be saying that? Unless I thought otherwise, right? So, yeah, no, definitely. This is saying you must deny your own experience and be there to serve my needs, right? And that's the concern that I have about the present situation. But we can come back to that. So your complication is, again, I'm not trying to oversimplify because I know what it's like to have these kinds of this kind of a mother. But the complication is not that there was good stuff and bad stuff, but there was bad stuff and you never had a chance to have it out with her because there was this fragility, there was this unstable situation. And of course, I mean, naturally, you're going to have some sympathy for your mother being in this abusive relationship. I mean, that's you would be heartless not to, right? And I'm sure that you had some sympathy for her in this situation because your mother sounds like a sort of child woman in a way, if that sort of makes sense. Not a lot of capacity to defer gratification, not a lot of capacity to meet people as equals, lost in a kind of mythology, looking to merge into a collective. This is a very primitive personality structure, a very toddler-ish kind of personality structure. So, yes, I mean, right, in a sense, you're the parent, she's the child, right? And that kind of stuff occurs far more commonly than we'd like to think. So if I understand it correctly, there's complication not because you're ambiguous about what happened and you thought some of it was good and some of it was bad, that because you have the insight of the people whose wisdom is sort of inflicted upon them through chaos and trauma early on in life, you have some understanding of your mother and her helplessness, in a sense, in the face of her life. Does that
Yeah, that is exactly right. I mean, I feel like I never got a chance to say how it made me feel, and I never got a chance to really sort of open up barrels of anger on her for the way that I felt about it, because I also felt sorry for her.
Right.
And I could see how she was just totally messing up her life. I mean, sort of like almost self-destructively making bad decisions, which even as a child I've kind of thought, oh my God, this is such a bad plan. Why are we doing this? And I never got a chance, and I don't feel like, it's not like there's this ambivalence of some deep nostalgia inside me. She was very good to me in certain ways. I mean, for example, she was, although she was like a child emotionally, she was quite intellectually, in some ways, she was quite kind of, sort of gave me lots of books and that type of stuff. But I don't have a lot of nostalgia about it. My ambivalence, if that's maybe not the right word, is just that I just feel like I never got to close the book, and I never got to really, you know, I never got to be myself in such a way as to actually kind of say my feelings about some of the stuff that went on. And what makes me feel even worse about the funeral is that there's a family story about my mother, which is, oh, she was such a wonderful teacher, and she's taught so many children, and she helped so many people. She was always helping people with their plans and showing them stuff.
A free spirit.
Yeah, exactly. Such a free spirit. So clever. And, you know, and so there's all this stuff which I know is going to, people are going to want to be doing that, and they're going to be pushing on me to be going, oh yes, my mother, yes, you know, and I'm a bright bloke too, because, you know, I was brought up by her, and this is how they...
So you must have done something right. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And so I can just feel this huge weight of expectation, which, if I go there, you know, it'd be like me either being really tight-lipped or letting forth on... Are you still there?
Yeah.
Sorry, there's somebody else trying to do something. I don't know what's going on. Somebody's... Oh, I know. It's somebody on the Sunday chat appears to be saying something. Skype just opening windows on me.
If you click on the leave button along the top, that pops up for me as well, sometimes a long time after I log into Skype. Just click on the leave and it won't keep popping up.
Okay. Basically... That was the sort of my feelings about the funeral. That's sort of where I am.
Right. Well, I mean, given the imminence of this situation, and I was talking about this with Christina this morning, and certainly it's better if conclusions can be drawn more slowly out of a conversation, but given the imminence of this situation, I hope you don't mind if I hit the gas a little bit and vault over a few things. First of all, I can guarantee you that if you go to the funeral, you will loathe it from the very core of your being. You will feel humiliated. You will feel invisible. You will feel like you're participating in an empty and horrible charade. And you will look at the people who you feel have forced you or backed you into this kind of corner with utter contempt. And you will also look, I think, upon yourself with not the most elevated of views. Because the process that is going on in the case of this funeral is exactly the same process that was going on when you were a child, right? So people lied, people lived with what you were subjected to as a child by lying to themselves about the virtue of your mother, right? So the man who abuses a woman says, you know, well, she deserves it, she wants it, she loves it, you know, whatever it is, right? By lying to himself about the motivations of the person he's abusing, he has the capacity to excuse his own actions, right? So as a child, you were clearly in a highly toxic environment, a very, very ridiculous and difficult situation. And your extended family let all of this happen, right?
Yeah.
And the question is, what did they tell themselves that made that okay? What did they tell themselves that made it okay that you grew up in this, you know, fragmented, kaleidoscopic nightmare of chaos and confusion and so on, right? How did they make this okay? Well, they made it okay by portraying your mother within their own mind as some sort of mythological nymph of passion and a free spirit and clever and unconventional and, you know, and eccentric. And of course, in the British society, eccentric is something that's used, I think, a little bit too freely. But there is, there was a need for the family structure, the extended family, to protect you as a child, right? Because there was clearly distress and confusion and problems, right? And I'm sure you weren't the only person who heard this vicious verbal abuse that your mother's lover inflicted upon her, right? I mean, this would be something that would be knowledgeable. And of course, to anybody with any sense, if you hear a woman or a man being verbally abused in a horrendous manner, you know that this is indicative of some pretty severe pathologies. This is not, well, they were just having a bad day, right? I mean, I think I know the kind of abuse that you're talking about. And, I mean, it's malevolent and sadistic and destructive and virtually endless. So then they have another piece of information to work with to understand your family, your mother, and so on. And then to have a child in this environment, right? To have a child in an environment where toxic and soul-searing verbal abuse is occurring is something that your family did not want to act on. Right, so there's a mythology that your mom was a free spirit and different and eccentric, and you know, then all of these labels are placed on her, but only because of people's guilt, right? Because they didn't act to protect you as a child. They didn't sit down with your mom and say, "Look, we can't do anything to change your relationship with this guy. I mean, this is, we think you should get some help. This is clearly not healthy. This is clearly not productive. But the really important thing is that you have a helpless child here." And we need to do something to intervene. This is not a good environment for a child to be growing up in. I mean, that's what any reasonably decent extended family would do. Now, whether they succeeded or not is not the issue, right? The question is not whether you succeed or not. The question is whether you try.
Yeah.
And nobody ever did, right? So nobody ever did. So what they did, the scar tissue of that failure to live up to any kind of reasonable standards of protection of the helpless, the scar tissue of that is mythology about your mom, right? And your identity and experience is erased in that situation. You have to, because you carry the pain of the family, right? You carry the pain, the shame, the guilt, the lies, the falsehoods, the evasions, the corruption, the, you know, whatever, right? You have to carry all of this because you actually experienced it, and you know, and you're not willing to submerge your experience into a kind of family religious fiction, right? It's fantasy. So you have to carry an enormous burden, which is called the truth, which is called abuse, right? And the less other people feel it, the more we feel it. That's just the natural antennae that gets amplified in the presence of people who deny basic realities. So my concern, like fundamentally around this whole funeral situation, is the degree to which it is reproducing the past, right? When you are in a toxic family environment and the extended family is part of that, nobody's asking you what's going on. Right. Nobody's asking you why you're feeling the way that you're feeling. No one's sitting down. Like, what happens is you immediately get judged and bullied, and your authentic and genuine experience is erased. And you must conform to the family fantasies of virtue, though you are the one who suffered the most for the absence of that virtue. Right. So just like your mom said, "Am I a good mom?" and there's no way to answer that doesn't either violate your experience or feed her fantasies of virtue. In this situation, it's exactly the same. Your family is not saying, well, there must have been something pretty serious that went on with this guy, that he is willing to take what is no doubt to many people a radical step of not going to his own mother's funeral. Let us find out what happened, right? Because, I mean, if somebody's not doing something that you want them to do, you can either stop bullying them or you can try and find out the root cause, right?
Yeah.
But what they're doing is they're just bullying you, right? And saying, well, you have to. They're playing on your sentimentality. They're playing on potential feelings of guilt. And why? Because there's a great family secret called we abuse the children collectively. Because we either abuse them or we fail to protect them. And that guilt about that fundamental reality is something that is going to be exposed if you're not at the funeral. Right? Because they're not concerned about your mom. And they're not concerned about you. What they're concerned about is a secret of their own shameful behavior getting out. And fundamentally, they just don't want it to be visible, right? So they know that you have to be there to plug up the hole of the family guilt.
Yeah, I think that's true.
Because no one's asking you. No one's saying, my God, what happened to you that you don't want to go to your mom's funeral? And not like, how could, you know, what could conceivably have happened to you that you don't want to come and pay respects to your mom who did this and that for you and so on. But nobody's just asking you, right?
Yeah.
Which means that they're not interested in your experience, and there's a reason that somebody is that there's a reason that nobody's asking you, right? I mean, that this is the hell that we plunge into when we look at these family structures that are so dysfunctional, right? If somebody said come to dinner on Sunday, and you said I can't, they'd say, oh, how come, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Right, they'd ask. But there's a reason why absolutely nobody is asking you why you're doing what you're doing. And why do you think they're not asking you?
They just don't want to know the answer. I mean, it's
Ah,
definitely
they
don't.
do know the answer. They do know the answer. Like if I say I don't want to know the answer, it's because I do know the answer.
Right.
They know. Everybody knows. Everybody's going through this incredible, wild, horrific charade of stepping around the elephant in the room.
Yeah, and I guess the problem is that they can avoid the answer if I go along.
Sure.
Because they can just say, oh, yes, look, here he is, and everyone, we're all here, and oh, what a wonderful life, and let's all now go and reminisce together.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. This mythology requires your participation. This mythology, which destroys your experience, which destroys authenticity, which destroys truth, which destroys integrity, which destroys healing, right? Because you have to acknowledge things to fix them, right? You have to, families have to deal with the truth before they can heal, right? But everybody wants to stay in this insane, vacuous fantasy. And your participation in maintaining that, right, in turning the sword of invisibility upon your own flesh, right? Your participation in this is absolutely required. And the amazing thing, I mean, this is the amazing thing, and it is pretty horrific in human nature, but it seems to be very common, I mean, certainly in the absence of philosophy, it's very common, that you were victimized by your family for many years, either directly or through a failure to protect you. And who then becomes the bad guy at the end of all of this? The people who abuse or the people who say, I was abused?
Yeah. I know. And I'm getting the messages saying, oh, we'll be devastated. I also got a second message from my aunt that said, because I sent her a message saying, look, I'm not trying to hurt anyone. I just need to do things my own way. And she says, you know, whether or not you're trying to hurt me, I'll be devastated.
Well, and that's fascinating. I'm sorry to interrupt, but this is where the argument for morality can really help you. I mean, it's absolutely fascinating that their pain should propel you to action, right?
Yeah.
In this one instance. But your pain as a child did not propel them to action for 20 years.
Yeah.
Because what they're trying to do is they're trying to say, if you do something that hurts me, that's a bad thing. If you do anything which causes me pain, that's a bad thing. And of course, they really, it's true, right? If you don't go, it'll cause them pain because it opens up a whole bunch of family wounds that they themselves have been trying to cover up. But if we look at that principle, that we should not, or that our action, we should refrain from doing something if it causes the other person pain, or we should act to avoid that other person's pain, or to help ameliorate that other person's pain. Where the hell was this principle when you were helpless and a child and in need of some protection and support from your extended family? What about your pain for 20 years when you had no capacity to help yourself?
Yeah. Well, I really agree with all of this, Steph, and it's really, you know, it's actually just really good to hear, to be able to talk about it.
Sure.
But my sort of just on a really practical level, how do you think I should handle it?
Right. Well, in a perfect world, how would you, like if you had all the freedom that you could imagine and would feel no guilt or repercussions for your actions, how would you like best to handle it? Or what would make you the happiest?
Well, I mean, not going, for sure. And I mean, how would I like to handle it?
Another way of looking at it is to say, if you could just fast forward 10 years and be over all the repercussions, or maybe even a year or whatever.
Yeah.
And just bypass all of the possible negative emotional manipulations or repercussions or this or that. How would you best like to achieve that or to handle it?
Well, I mean, I think one of my concerns is that, you know, I don't want to fight loads and loads of battles at the same time. And what I'm slightly concerned about is that I just know that there's going to be a gasp of, you know, social ostracism, not just from family members, but from anyone who is told, and of course everyone will, you know, eventually know.
Sure.
And you know, this kind of like, he did what? You know, this, I just don't want anybody else to have anything to do with my business, essentially, in terms of, you know, for example, I don't want to have to lie to anybody else, but then if they say, you know, are you going to the funeral or something, then like at work or whatever, it's just a total can of worms that
right.
I definitely don't want to have to start getting into conversations with them. And
right. Right.
So, you know, like trying to explain to people who I work with or who work for me, my take on, because, you know, I don't have an intimate relationship with any of those people, and I don't need one either, but there are social expectations around this thing.
Absolutely.
That I'm just concerned that I'm going to be, that there's going to be like a witch hunt, basically, which I would really like to just avoid. Ideally, I would like for the people at work and other people to have understood that my mother died, because obviously that is going to, you know, that information is going to be there, and to know nothing else about the whole issue,
right?
Because I don't want to get in. My friends, I'm happy to, you know, if that leads to any issues with them, then we'll see, let the chips fall where they do. But I don't want to be on the crusade for, like, look at me, I'm the guy who doesn't go to his mum's funeral. Yeah.
Right.
I don't want to have to play that part. I just don't want to get into a discussion about it with a wider group of people. With regard to my aunt and my family, I think I feel sort of that I ought to talk to somebody, one of them, about it, just because I want to be able to know that, well, you know,
I gave it my all, right?
I gave it my all. I really did my best. And it wasn't like I just kind of said, what? She's dying? No, I'm not coming. Bye. You know,
right.
I don't want, I just.
Right. Right.
I think
it's important to design a regret-free future, especially when you're taking socially challenging steps like this. It's very important to design a regret-free future, which is why I do suggest you go and talk to people. Mm-hmm. And I would suggest that you get as many people from your extended family together as you can, right? Because otherwise you tell one person that the story's going to get distorted, and then other people are going to phone and said, you know, I hear you spat on your aunt. It's going to get sort of messy, right?
Yeah, that's a good idea.
I'd say get them all together in the room and say, look, and just be frank, right? I mean, I know that there's a lot of discomfort and concern about me not going to my mom's funeral, or if you like, you can just use her first name, right? Mm. And I want to tell you why I'm doing this right now. You have a choice. As I say this, you can choose to just judge me as a terrible person or a mean person or a cold person and this and that. But I know my mom. I know my mom better than any of you, because I spent more time with her and I got to see her up close, right? So first of all, no one in this family is going to tell me about my mom. Like, don't even try, because I was her child. I came out of her. She raised me. I was dragged around the world with her. I experienced her close, full hand, first off. You guys didn't. You did not live with her as adults, right? So that's, like, don't tell me about my mom. That's sort of important, right? I'm the guy who knows the most about my mom. So, and then I just sort of say, well, here's why. Here's why I'm doing what I'm doing, right? And the family can either listen to me, and nobody's going to force anyone. Anyone can get up and leave whenever they want, right? But I'm going to say my piece. And nobody has to listen to me, and nobody has to understand anything. You all can just judge me and say that I'm a bad person. But what I'm doing is I'm trying to look at the future, right? Because I have a life to live. My mother's life is over. She made her choices. She lived her life. I'm trying to make different choices, because I think that the choices that my mom made were really terrible and destructive choices in many, many ways. And I suffered more than anyone in this room. I suffered enormously for those choices. And I don't want to honor that. I don't want to pretend that that's okay. I don't want to pretend that all of the pain that I went through at her hands is suddenly evaporated because her life has ended, right? That doesn't make any difference, right? What I experienced at her hands doesn't change because those hands have stopped moving. And so I'd like to talk honestly, and I'm not, you know, maybe I'll end up going. Maybe I won't. Maybe I will, maybe I won't. I don't think so. But I think the first thing that we need to do as a family is to speak honestly Because all I ever hear is that my mom is great and clever and wacky and eccentric and a free spirit and, you know, look at a great mom and this and that. But that's not true. And no one can tell me that, right? Because she was my mom. No one can tell me what she was like as a mom. I know. I was there day in and day out. You all weren't. So the first thing that we need to do, if you guys are interested in having me come to the funeral, the first thing that we need to do as a family is to speak openly. And I'm the guy who needs to speak openly the most because I was her child. And I'm the one who's at the moment leaning towards not coming to her funeral. So I just start talking about the things that happened and how they made you feel and what happened. And maybe people will listen and maybe they'll get up and storm out and maybe they'll attack you. But you're a strong guy. You can take all of that. But you at least will not have hidden. And you at least will have had the chance to, you'll have given them every conceivable opportunity to do the right thing.
Well, I think that's a really good idea. And I mean, just to make an obvious point, and like this is probably too obvious for words, but I'm not going to invite my father to that, right?
And why would you not?
Well, because I've stopped seeing him. So it seems kind of like, it seems a bit strange to then say.
Right, right. I understand what you're saying. But there may be some, if you ended up at the funeral. And you might, right? If your family listens and they understand, right, the other option you have is to prepare a secret eulogy. Right?
I really have thought about that.
I think that would be kind of springing it on people. I think that would be very satisfying.
No, I know. And I think the other thing is that, you know, that would almost be confirming the bad guy thing, you know. It'd be like they've come there to grieve,
right,
and I've come there to, like, spoil the party, basically.
Right, with your own agenda of this death.
With my own agenda. So I thought about that. But then I thought, I mean, I think it would be cinematically quite dramatic. But I think actually it wouldn't really be a very nice thing to do because
it would unfortunately be a gesture more worthy of your mother than of you.
Yeah. And I think in some ways, if you go along, then you've got, you know, there's, as you say, it would be springing something.
Yeah, kind of a contract when you go to a funeral that you're
not going
to crash the person in the grave, right?
Yeah, exactly. And so I think that, but I think meeting up with the family is it makes a lot of sense. But just on what were your thoughts? What were your thoughts about my father? Because there is going to be the obvious thing there, which is at the same time they're going to be doing this. Well, why isn't your father here? And what are we talking about him? And how do I, you know, what do you think I should do about that angle? Because, I mean, I either sort of say, look, that's another matter. And I've got issues with him, and we'll talk about that another day. Or I bring the whole thing on, and we just do the whole thing. I mean, what do you think?
Well, it really I think, in a sense, talking about your dad to your extended family when he's not there is going to create the same problems of the jungle drums sending confused signals back and forth.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, this hearsay stuff. Of course, there's been some stuff floating around on the board about my podcast recently about people's success or failure in life relative to their arguments for how to live and so on. When you don't have direct communication with people, things just get very confusing and convoluted very quickly. It's that, you know, you whisper around the circle and the story that comes back has nothing to do with it. I would say that given that you don't have any particular issues with your dad insofar as you're not as torn, then I would say that, and if they say, well, your dad, this and that and the other, it's like, well, but that's my relationship with my dad, which again is nobody's business here, right? What I'm talking about is not my relationship with my mother because she's dead. What I'm talking about, you could say in this family meeting, is my relationship with this extended family, right? This is not about me and dad. It's not about me and mom. It's about me and you guys and my knowledge about the past and your stories about my past, right? Which have nothing to do with what happened.
Yeah. Well, I think that is a good idea. And I mean, you know, it might not be easy to get them all to come together in the same room because they're all over the country, but at least I can do it with as many of them that are prepared to do it.
Absolutely, absolutely. And you could always tape it too. Send it to the people who can't come, right? I mean, there's lots of different ways to do it so that there's less whisperings and you know, because the I first of all, I mean, I could be wrong, but my strong guess is that this is not going to be something that ends up with you being closer to your family. I mean, just guessing, right?
Yeah,
because my experience has been that where people have done wrongs that can't be restituted, right, can't be fixed, then they just cling to that to their deathbed, right? They can't go back, they can't undo. And the lack of protection that you experienced at the hands of your family can't be undone, right? Nobody can go back and give you a better childhood, right? There's no amount of effort or will. And that, of course, is why they're going to cling to this story, but the purpose of this, of course, is to resolve ambiguity in you, not to change their behavior.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Steph. That makes a lot of sense, and I'm going
to
do it.
And if you do this, you will actually be able to lift a car. how much more terrifying can it be to confront early authority figures with your genuine experience when they've spent their entire lives denying it? I mean, that's terrifying. And look, I mean, my heart goes out to you. I wish that making the world a better place did involve these kinds of Herculean feats of emotional strength, but I think that it does.
You know what? I think the very interesting thing for me is that I know it's going to end badly with my aunt. I mean, there's just no way, given the messages she's been sending. My cousins, I'm not sure, because they're sort of, you know, they were children as well at the same time, and so they haven't got quite the same responsibility, but then again, they've also bought into the story, so you never know. I mean, I'm not sure quite how that's going to play itself out.
Well, I think my guess is, again, this is just a hunch, but my guess is that with regards to you, there should be a thawing from your cousins. But the problem is, as soon as your cousins realize that their own parents were in on it,
they're going to have to realign
their view of their own parents, that you'll probably lose them. But you never know, right? Some people make it, most people don't, some people do.
Oh, blimey. Right, well, that's another one to set up then. So thank you. That is extremely useful. And I think I've got quite a clear plan of action, and I'm not involving... they're going to try and get my father in there.
Yeah.
And I'm going to have to block that. I'll just work that out now.
You can't control... If somebody brings him along, I mean, you can either ask him to leave, but if he doesn't want to, you know...
Well, if he, you know, somebody else brings him along, then fine, we'll do it. You know,
right.
He can be there. Because, I mean, that, in a sense, is out of my control. And
sure, you can just make your request known, right? Like when I posted these podcasts recently, I said, these are for, you know, gold and diamonds, and people just hand them out. I mean, I can't control that. All I can do is express my preference, right? And people can do whatever they want.